It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medication to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this edition of Senior Talk. We are talking about funerals, and one of my favorite people in the whole world, Jim Fernald, is here from Brookings Smith. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
You are very well known in the state, one of the best, and your website is a wealth of information.
Oh, thanks.
You do everything from cremation, pre-planning, give information to people who aren't really sure what to do. So I went looking around. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting is you have this what to do when someone dies, whether you are sitting with them and it's expected or whether it's a sudden death. And I wonder how many people really know the first thing you should do, because there are things that you don't think of, like a death certificate and transporting the body somewhere. So let's talk about that. If someone dies, whether expected or not, what's the first thing someone should do?
Well, a lot of people think it's like, hey, let's get the funeral director, you know, Johnny on the spot kind of thing. And it really doesn't have to go that way. We encourage people to, you know, especially if the passing is at home, usually hospice care, that kind of thing, find out their protocols, you know, because a lot of times the big question is, you know, how does the pronouncing happen and all that? And that's really a question for, you know, for the hospice people or the nursing, you know, people that would be there, that kind of thing.
Do you need to call the police? Is it calling 911, my person has died or this person has died in the house?
If it was an accidental death, or let's say that someone wasn't expected to pass, but you came home and to check on, you know, mom or whatever, and you did find her that had, you know, deceased, that yes, that would be, because no one was present. They call it an unattended death. Then we do encourage to call the police. They will partially investigate. You know, they'll call the again the primary care physician to make sure they're willing to sign for the, you know, death certification piece. But as well as when people do pass at home, and commonly that is, you know, under nursing care and family care. Boy, there are some families out there today that just really step it up to take care of their loved one at home. It's amazing. And but the misconception is, you know, again, let's call a funeral director. And one of the things we try to encourage for people to be bedside is that we don't have to be called right away. Take your time with that. I've been bedside with my loved ones. And at the time of passing, and my family's loaded with funeral directors, it's an emotional time. And, you know, and to... there's just something about that that you just want to just kind of be in the moment, you know, and to express your grief and to kind of work through that, you know. So
it's not an automatic, we have to this person's died, so we have to get them somewhere right now.
Right. It's not an automatic. Yeah.
A woman that I know, spouse passed away, and she didn't call the funeral director right away, but let the dogs say goodbye.
Yeah.
So dogs went in and laid down, stayed about half an hour and said their goodbyes and then came back. And then they were much more well-adjusted afterwards.
Yep.
And then the funeral home came in.
Yep. Yeah.
So that does make a difference. But I think the instinct is to, oh my God, they're dead. I have to call someone right now.
True. And the other part of, or the trend has been cremation in this region. Probably 70 or 75% of our community is choosing cremation. Unlike years ago when you had the wake and the visiting hours and all that, you knew you were going to see them again, you know. So we really try to encourage, especially if, you know, and to talk about pre-planning, but if we know that they've selected cremation as their, what they'd like to do, there's no place like being at home to kind of have that viewing kind of experience before they're gone. And the part of the whole viewing experience is the reason why we do that in our culture today is to grasp the reality that the death actually happened. And that's such a powerful thing. And everybody's so different with all these things, you know, but that's commonly why we do it.
How long physically do you have to have the body there? I mean, probably, I'm guessing, not a few days.
True. But. Yeah. Usually it's a, you know, everybody's body's chemistry is so different. What they have passed from is different. Medications are on, that kind of thing. But to answer your question, probably 2 or 3 hours anyway, as I'd suggest. And usually after that amount of time, people are ready, you know, for us to make the call. And now I'm going to say, we don't live at the funeral home. Yeah, I mean, we aren't there every hour of 7 days a week, although we kind of are. So a lot of time, and for most funeral homes, their staff comes from their own home to respond to the passing. So it might take 45 minutes to an hour, depending on where you are, you know, to get there. So to keep that in mind, too.
Keep that in mind. So not try not to go past that window, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's a good point about cremation, because you don't see the person again. Or can you? Can you do...
Oh, you can.
And then do cremation afterwards, after the viewing and the wake and the funeral, and do that.
Well, many people do choose the wake and the funeral, then cremation. There's no question about it. I think to go to, religiously speaking, the Catholic religion, that's such a traditional thing, to have the wake and in the the viewing or whatever, and then to have the the mass the next day, and then cremation. I think if there was any trend, that would be one. But you can still have embalming. And we've also done, it sounds kind of odd, but we do viewings without embalming. A lot of times, the passing occurred at the home, but, the sister or one of the kids couldn't make it. We would, for us at Birking Smith, when we bring a loved one into our care, we place them in refrigeration. It's kind of in lieu of the embalming piece. And then later they can see them before, the cremation. We would, dress them or prepare them in a dignified way so that they're able to say goodbye. Yeah, but for many people, being at home, and I tell you, the hospice groups today are amazing. To have that, the social workers, chaplain, whatever, is really nice too. But everybody's so different with all those things.
If somebody does elect to, and I'm speaking financially, so do they have to buy a casket for the viewing and then get cremated? Do they have that casket, or do you kind of rent them out or let them use one?
Well,
it sounds cavalier, but I'm thinking those are expensive. And if you're only using it, it's like a wedding dress. You're using it for 5 hours. What's financially the best thing to do?
Well, that's a great question. The minimum thing that is a requirement, I should say, is when we transport somebody's body to the crematory, they have to be in what's called an alternative container. The name comes from that it's an alternative to a casket. So you can imagine it's the size of a casket, but it's, to be honest, it's a wooden bottom cardboard container. Yep. The staff at the crematories are not licensed to actually handle the body. They handle this container that's well labeled and everything that the body comes in. But to go to purchasing that, that's the minimum requirement, I should say. Although we have many people that may want something a little more than that. Some people, especially when they want viewing, we do have a rental casket. We do change the name. We call it ceremonial casket, but we even have a rental urn, because some people want to have a nice urn for the service and then to scatter later. So why buy an expensive urn, kind of thing, So there's a couple levels of things, but, the alternative container is like $125, and it kind of goes up from there, to give you some idea.
Okay. And there are other things that people need to do that they don't think of. Like if the person's a veteran, what should they do if they're a veteran? Do they just tell the funeral parlor?
Yes. One of the veterans, and we have some awesome veterans around here, and I was actually in a cemetery, that surprises you, right? with some flags, and I was looking around, I was like, wow, look at all of these flags. These are our loved ones that have gone before, that are all veterans that have served in Korea, Vietnam, World War II, World War I. I was kind of taken back by it.
Sure.
I was out in Kandusky. But anyways, for veterans, the key thing is to have their paperwork. We really need their discharge papers, or their DD-214 form is the name. And that will help us get a gravestone marker, honor guard, help us with if they want to be placed in a veteran cemetery, to make sure they have eligibility to do that, as well as they're entitled to. There are some other benefits we can help them with, depending on you know, if they were disabled from their service record, or if they are retired from the service. So there's a bunch of things that we can do.
And you'd want to know about a life insurance policy.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think that's a lot of people think they're like, you know, it's a gray area. You know, when we come to the funeral home, we have to have our checkbook handy type of thing, you know. And not necessarily so. You know, I mean, obviously, we have to go to that discussion of how are we going to pay for things. And so many people, that's why they have life insurance, is so that they can use that towards the funeral services. Many people are, you know, don't want to deal with the forms, you know, and we can do that at the funeral home. You know, we're in charge of getting the death certification piece anyway, so we can, you know, get the form completed. And all we got to do is have their signature on it. It's called an assignment of the policy to allow us to do that. And essentially how that works is we ask through the assignment for what we're owed to complete the funeral services out of the policy. So if it's a $10,000 policy and our bill's $5,000, they will make us a check, or the insurance company, for what we're owed, and the remainder would go to the original beneficiary. So that's how that works.
Okay. That sounds great. And much easier than trying to gather all of this on your own, although we're going to talk about that very thing when we come back. If you'd like to hear this show again, log on to WVOMFM.com and listen to it in podcast form. We'll be right back right after this, so stay with us. More to come. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk, Jim Fernell, Brookings-Smith. So when you have that paperwork, the veterans paperwork and insurance paperwork, do you recommend someone getting a brightly colored folder and putting it in one place, a safe place?
Really do. Yeah, and that's something that you want your family to know where you've tucked it away. Because we've had so many people on a weekend say, oh, you know, mom left everything in the safety deposit box at the bank. And
which is close.
We can't get to it. Yeah, really. Yeah. And, you know, something with accessibility, you know, would be great, you know, because there's nothing like having some kind of plan or some kind of, you know, directive or whatever as to what the needs would be. Yeah.
Well, that's a beautiful segue. But so if you could put a copy in the safety deposit box to keep it safe, but that brightly colored folder in a bookcase or in a filing cabinet somewhere that is differentiated from all the other things, but that's right there. Someone can go to it easily, go to the pink folder, everything's in there. But that brings to mind pre-planning.
Sure.
Because this, even just talking about this and whether the death was expected or unexpected, there is a lot to do in a really grief-stricken time. So if you're pre-planning, and it may sound a little cavalier, like, oh, honey, let's go plan our funerals and then go out to lunch. But it really makes a difference, doesn't it?
It does.
The people you see. What are the differences you see from people who have done that as opposed to those who have no idea what they're doing?
Well, it's kind of all over. There are many people that to go to what you just said, you know, no, it's like just another appointment. We'll go and speak with the funeral home and then we'll go grab a bite or, you know, whatever. But, which is fine, because I will tell you that, having done this for 30 years, that when people leave the funeral home from deciding whatever they've decided on, it's like this huge weight has been lifted. You know, it's like, oh, I'm so glad to actually get that out on paper so that that someone else knows what I want to do, because so many people have so many questions. So to kind of go there, you know, I mean, a lot of people think too, and we'll hit a bunch of misconceptions here, that you know, gee whiz, we have to pay the funeral home to do that. And we don't charge to do pre-planning, you know, at all. You know, to ask conversation and having a plan is a big deal to not just to us, but to the family we're serving.
So you don't have to prepay when you pre-plan. You can, but those are different things.
Yeah.
And you probably should, to maybe lock in prices. Is that how that works?
You can, yeah. Yeah.
So the pre-planning, you walk in, and then how extensive can it be, or can it be whatever you want? What are the questions that you would ask?
Well, you kind of nailed it, is that we split it into two parts. One part is the plan. The other part is the funding of the plan. The plan itself, sometimes, to talk about funding, is like the basis of what we want to put away into the funding piece. But to really focus on the plan, The details are important, you know. Although, you know, and I've got, again, another misconception is that some people think, oh boy, one size fits all, you know, and it's not. We don't have any, you know, exact way that every person does it the same way. So everybody has so many different concerns, ideas, different cemeteries, different family dynamics, different death experiences, because so many people say, I don't want to do it this way because so-and-so did it that way or whatever. And so and especially to go to cremation too, and the other part is some families don't all get along. I know that surprises you.
Yeah.
That, you know, maybe one child would be okay with cremation, but the other one is definitely, you know, we can't do that. So what a lot of people don't realize is that one of the requirements for cremation, for us to do a cremation, is what's called the cremation authorization form. We have people do that when they want cremation signed for themselves. That creates a clear directive, for instance, as to what they would want to do.
So they're not leaving it up to the children.
True.
That may not agree.
True. Yep. Yeah, and then if you create that plan from the cremation and fund it by a contractual agreement with the funeral home, we're supposed to, you know, we're mandated to provide that service as they've contracted. You know, but to kind of go to families not getting along, there's some families that we work with that don't want their children to make their arrangements at all. So we call it a written directive that they've, you know, maybe a friend or maybe their attorney or whatever. We had one just a little while ago where the attorney made all appointed somebody to make all, you know, all the decisions for the family. And because there was three daughters, they never all got along. And so, you know, so we took the directive from them, because after the death occurs, there's a state law that's called custody and control of deceased remains. And in that law, there's a pecking order of who can be in charge. So if someone doesn't pre-plan, we have to go to that list. So it starts with spouse, you know, adult children, parents, brothers, sisters, grandchildren, down through.
So there's a lot left up to chance if you don't plan it yourself.
Definitely. You know, and one of the things you kind of talked about earlier is that one of the hardest things that people do is the obituary. You know, to try to put someone's life into a few paragraphs, you know, is tough, especially at $1.25 a word. You know, when you
put $1.25 a word.
Yeah, is what it is. So, yeah. So
I don't get sticker shock very often, but my obituary just got a lot shorter. We will talk more with Jim Fertled when we come back right after this. Stay with us. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk. So I've recovered from the $1.25 award. That just surprised me. I don't even know why, because I don't know what I was expecting, but I'm thinking of the obituaries that I see in the paper that are a foot long. I don't do the math in my head. That is a lot of money.
It is. And the other thing is a trend has been the photo with the obituary. And I can't tell you how many times.
That's not free.
It's not free, no, but it's not quite as bad. But it'd be nice to have the photo and as a plan, you know, which we do a lot of. Because I can't tell you how many times I've scanned the driver's license for a photo, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was noticing that sometimes, because I always look at the obituaries, I'm very about seniors, and I look to see if anybody that I know has passed away. And I like to read through them and see what their lives were like. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the photos do, they're grainy and pixely, and they look like mugshots. And I like when they do an older photo and a younger photo, but if you haven't seen the person in a long time, you might not recognize them if it's been 40 years later.
Exactly.
Yeah. And put that in. So who writes this? Do you take that on, or does the family, is that tasked with them?
It's kind of a, we both work at it together. Many times families like us to kind of get the format correct, get it to them. They'll make corrections, that kind of thing. But we've also had fantastic obituaries that the family's done themselves. Usually the obituary gets channeled through the funeral director. How that works financially, we charge whatever to the penny, whatever the charge is from the whatever papers they want, and we can send them nationally. But as well as, I guess a trend has been, because of the cost, sometimes people put in just a small service notice in the paper, and then on our website would be the full obituary, you know, with a photo and condolences and all those things.
And very easy to find on your website, because when I went on researching the show and I typed in brookingsmith.com, that was the first thing that came up, were recent obituaries. And I thought, that's really convenient. If you've recently lost someone, you don't have to go searching too far.
We have a new site just recently, but everything's right on every obituary page. So if the service is in wherever, we have directions to there. There's maps, there's condolences, there's, you know, you can light a candle on the site in memory of. There's all kinds of things. If you have a favorite photo of maybe in high school or something you wanted to share with the family, you can upload it onto the site. There's all kinds of things you can do with it, you know. When people do slideshow presentations for, you know, for the services, all of those photos get uploaded onto our site too. So there's all kinds of nice things on there.
Well, that's a great bonus of pre-planning as well, because you could gather these photos.
Definitely.
Your favorite photos. I mean, I'm sure we all have pictures that we really would rather not have on a bulletin board during a funeral. I can think of several of mine. And then you get that family member who thinks it would be hilarious to put that photo up there. Yeah. So you bring the photos yourself, do the pre-planning, the photos, what you want in the obituary, maybe do some prepaying. And then when the person dies, all the family member has to do is call. Hey, Jim, come on over. Exactly. And it's all done.
It is, really. You can do pretty much all of it over the phone, you know, because really the key things we're looking at is, when do you want to do the service? That's the only real choice that needs to be made, you know, and that's a huge relief, because usually people have been, you know, up hours and, you know, bedside and for weeks on end, and they're not only emotionally upset, but also just physically drained from this whole experience, you know, and it's such a gift that we really encourage pre-planning. It really, so many families we've helped over the years, you know, I think the whole comprehension of the memorial process goes better too when people have pre-planned, you know. So, but to kind of go over there a little bit too, a lot of people ask about the funding of that too. In the state of Maine, the only funding that we can do is called a mortuary trust agreement. It's 7 pages long. It's actually in state law the agreement we have to use. Every funeral home has the same agreement across the state. It's a very consumer-friendly agreement, but where we're so limited, we at Brookingsmith, we try to just make sure the family knows what's in the agreement so that they're okay with it. It really doesn't, you know, a lot of people think, I guess, a misconception, oh, the funeral home wants to get, you know, you to fund that as much as you can kind of thing. And it's really not for us. We want to make sure people are okay with that because some of the things that are in the mortuary trust agreement is if there is any remainder, for instance, of the funds, who would get those? You know, and so let's say, you know, do you underfund it? Do you overfund it? You know, some people come in as part of the plan and say, okay, that's $5,500. You know, you can't put like gravestone markers, that kind of, there's all kinds of things you can fund. So,
such great information. The website to go to find out more is brookingsmith.com. Jim Fernell, thank you so much for being here. You're a wealth of knowledge in life and afterlife. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk. Thanks so much for listening. To hear the show and podcast, WVOMFM.com. Thanks for listening.